You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Daily Vet Life podcast, where we chat with equine veterinarians about the cases they've worked on in their clinics. I'm your host, Alex Beckstedt, editorial director of Equimanagement, and today I'm speaking with Dr. Alexandra Brunette about two starvation cases she managed through her work at Merrimack Farm Sanctuary in Vermont. This episode of the Daily Vet Life podcast is brought to you by DECRA. Dr. Brunette is a veterinarian at Vermont Large Animal Clinic, where she strives to provide compassionate and high-quality care to the horses of northern Vermont and New York. A graduate of Cornell University, Dr. Brunette has a special interest in geriatric medicine, internal medicine, and ophthalmology, with a focus on helping horses live comfortable, healthy lives at every stage. She believes that every horse, whether an elite athlete, a retired companion, or a neglected rescue, deserves thoughtful, individualized care. Dr. Brunette is also part of the team of hardworking individuals at Merrimack Farm Sanctuary, a haven for the area's horses, donkeys, and farm animals, founded by Era McDonald. Thank you, Dr. Brunette, for joining us today.
Thank you, Alex, for the introduction and for having me on this podcast today. So, as you said, Merrimack Farm Sanctuary is a sanctuary located in Charlotte, Vermont. Their mission is to provide homes and care for the abandoned farm life, whether in our area or in other areas as well. I've been very fortunate to have been able to be part of the team since its inception and really see where it's grown to today. I'm very happy to announce that as of the end of 2025, that Merrimack Farm Sanctuary has earned its GFAS accreditation. And for anybody that may not know what that stands for the Global Federation of Animal Sanctuaries. Sanctuary, in order to be accredited through the GFAS, these sanctuaries have to uphold a certain standard of care and excellence. So this means that they have to have certain policies in place that are looking at things like infection control, ground safety, euthanasia, acquisition of animals. And so we are very happy to have received this milestone just recently and very proud of them for doing so.
That's great news.
So my role as a veterinarian at Merrimack, I really help provide both herd level and individual level care for their donkeys and horses. At the herd level, really what I'm doing is I'm advising and helping implement things like vaccine control programs, biosecurity protocols, quarantine measures, anything that's really going to affect the health of their herd. And then on an individual basis, I am looking at each individual animal's needs and addressing them as needed, both historical and present on a medical case-by-case basis. They keep me quite busy. We have at least 20 residents, anywhere from our small donkey friends to our big draft horses. And so they each pose their own medical challenge.
Yeah, I'm sure you see a lot of unique cases that come through the sanctuary.
Yeah, so I think one of the unique challenges that faces rescues and sanctuaries across the board is these starvation cases. These cases that come in very poor body condition that have a lot of work that needs to be done in order to bring them to a healthy place. You know, one such duo that came in a few years ago that we have been working on and have quite a lot of gratitude towards our success with are Honey and Romeo. They are two aged horses that came in very poor body condition. So body condition scoring, for anybody that doesn't know, you're looking at 1 is a level of emaciation, 9 is obese, and 5 is ideal. And this helps us kind of fully evaluate what the current horse's body condition is looking at in terms of muscle mass, weight, fat deposits. And so Honey in particular was just reaching the scale of a 1 out of 9, and Romeo was between a 1 and a 2 out of 9, which is quite severe. They, due to the severe malnutrition that they had been under, we saw quite a few issues, you know, right when they came in. So on intake, honey in particular, being in the poor body condition that she was in, was quite weak, and she did require a lot of care, intravenous fluid, supportive care. She had laid down on the onset and needed quite a bit of support in order to help get her to be standing. The trailer ride in general can be quite hard on these guys. They not only are they quite weak, but they also then have to travel to make it to us. And sometimes we do have these cases where we sort of have to be there and jump all on board to make sure that they succeed in the first even 24 hours of being in the care. Some other clinical findings on intake of these guys was that they both had heart murmurs. So when your body has been under malnutrition for a period of time, you do result in some cardiac insult. And so they did come in with heart murmurs. You also have a degree of immune suppression. And the body, you can imagine, doesn't have enough energy to keep or to have enough food or calories to keep energy. It also is not going to have enough food or calories to support the immune system. And so we had things like lymphedema, dermatitis that we were also battling from the onset as well, not just a skinny horse. The biggest or most important thing to remember or take out of a starvation case is that as much as you want to throw the whole kitchen sink at these guys, you want to feed them as much as you want. You want to deworm them. You want to vaccinate them. You want to trim their feet, do their teeth. You want to make up for lost time. But the most important thing is to remember that these bodies have undergone a lot of damage, and you have to take it quite slow in this immediate period of time. So, you know, there is an excellent resource on how to refeed the starved horse that comes out of UC Davis by Dr. Stoll and her team that talks about, you know, what to do in even the first 24 hours, the first 3 days, the first week, and on forth. The thing that we did in these guys that is going to be a general rule across horses that have such severely low body condition scores and have not seen proper nutrition is going to be to take it slow. During the starvation process, your body first looks at, you know, using all of the carbs for energy. It then is going to turn towards fat. And then once it's utilized all of those, we're in a, you know, a normal case, you know, you're going to eat and you're going to replenish those fats and carbs. But in these guys who, you know, are not getting the nutrition, their body then starts breaking down protein. And this protein is not only going to come from muscle, but it's going to come from really important organs such as the heart, the GI as well. It's going to take it from whatever tissue that it can. And so when you have that process going on, we have compromised organs that sort of need to reset themselves and are not quite ready to just see a normal diet. So in this group in particular, we ended up doing alfalfa. Alfalfa is going to be your most commonly chosen feed to start these guys on. It is a high protein content. It also has a very nice balance of electrolytes and ideal for these starvation cases, phosphorus, which you need for energy, and oxygen or hemoglobin release of oxygen. And so you want to utilize the you know, alfalfa first and keep things simple and small and frequent. So what we did was these guys got round the clock every 4 hours, you know, through the night, sixth of a flake of alfalfa to start. And over time, you know, we gradually increased the amount of food while decreasing the frequency until we reached body conditions scores of two or more. We started introducing other things such as grain into their diet, and we really took it in a step-by-step process. The other thing that we initiated pretty early on with them was a probiotic. So the other piece to the starved horse is that you can imagine that their microbiome is going to be disturbed and they get a bit of a dysbiosis, what we call like a dysbiosis. So the gut needs the proper microbiome or microflora to help also, you know, digest and process the food that's coming in. And so we also implemented some probiotics into these guys, just again, to help support their GI tracts and help support them through absorption of all of the, you know, all of the feeds that they had coming in. It wasn't until we, you know, and that in itself, the whole feeding process, that in itself can be quite intense in terms of timing and frequency and, you know, making sure that we're not developing what's called a refeeding syndrome. So if you go ahead and feed that horse as much as it wants to eat, or go ahead with some of these, you know, heavy grain diets, you can cause what we call a refeeding syndrome, which is the same or very similar thing that they see in people, where you go too fast, too soon, the body isn't ready to absorb what you're trying to feed. It can cause insulin spikes. It can then driving phosphorus into the cells, and you're going to lead towards organ dysfunction, cardiac dysfunction, and it can even result in death. So you have to be a bit careful about what you are putting into these guys. And as much as hungry as they look, and as much as your heart is tugged at their appetite and their wanting to eat and their body condition, that it really is for their own good that you take things pretty slow on the nutrition front.
Calling all equine veterinarians. Are you tired of feeling like you're on an island when it comes to caring for your patients? Dechra Veterinary Products is here to bridge that gap. They understand the challenges you face. That's why they offer a comprehensive line of high-quality products like Zycosan and Osphos, and empower you to offer your patients cutting-edge therapies like ProVet APC. They're not just a supplier, though. Dechra provides ongoing training and support to help you stay ahead of the curve and deliver the best possible care. Visit www.dechra-us.com to discover how Dechra can be your partner in equine health. When you say taking things slow, how slow are we talking? How long does that gradual refeeding process typically take?
Yeah, so it depends on the individual. So in these cases where we're looking at, you know, a body condition score of a 1, maybe a 2 in these cases, you are looking at this first, it's usually the first 3 days of these very frequent alfalfa meals. After the first 3 days, as long as the horse is handling it well, then you can start increasing the amount of alfalfa that you're giving per feeding. And then you really are not introducing grains or much other in terms of feedstuffs until you're reaching, you have improved that body condition score by a degree, is when you're going to start introducing other feedstuffs into their diet. It is a little bit variable. You know, we had another horse that came in that had a body condition score of a 2 out of 9 without the longstanding period of weight loss that our other guys had gone through. And so we were able to sort of increase that process, right? Just start with alfalfa for a couple days, only for a couple days. And then we reintroduce some hay pellets. And really, honestly, I tend to be more heavily on the forage diet for quite a bit of time before I'm adding in grains for these guys.
So did Honey or Romeo have any other concurrent issues that you were concerned about in addition to just the body condition score?
Yeah. So once we reached a BCS of about 3 out of 9, then we started investigating, you know, any other medical underlying conditions further that required more testing or more interference on my part. Like, for example, I really could not do an oral exam, a sedated oral exam, at the level that they came in because they were too weak to stand. And I worried about, you know, sedating these guys and having their ability to make it through an oral exam. We peeked in their mouths as best we could. I could identify that Honey had quite the dental challenges, but it wasn't until we got her in a better space that we could really kind of jump on her. So we got her on some, you know, we had some immune suppression and some dermatitis that we tried treating topically initially. We did end up putting her on some antibiotics once we felt like her gut could C-A-S-M-Z, C an antibiotic. We also got her, we evaluated her metabolic status and were able to get her on Cushing's medication to address underlying Cushing's. That also was likely contributing to the fact that we had two horses in the same situation, one was thinner and had some more struggle than the other. You know, Honey was, we estimated about 25, while Romeo at the time we estimated to be about 16 to 18. And so we did have a little bit of a difference in body conditions between the two, and what made Honey have a harder time than Romeo. We were able to answer that question in that she had underlying metabolic disease. She had underlying Cushing's that we got her on medication for. And then she also had quite the amount of dental abnormalities. So one of the biggest reasons of weight loss, or most common reasons of weight loss or inability to maintain weight in an older horse, is going to come from the mouth. The mouth is where we process and grind hay. And if the horse has a challenge that compromises their ability to grind hay, that needs to be addressed, and or we need to come up with a different solution to help support that horse's body's caloric needs. So Honey in particular had, you know, multiple changes to her mouth related to age. So she had what we call a wave mouth, meaning that normally in a horse, you have quite tabletop occlusal surfaces. So it's going to be a flat occlusal surface with corrugated teeth, and they're going to grind against each other to grind down hay and these like long stemmed forage. Honey's occlusal surface resembled more of what we call like ocean waves, with multiple recessed teeth that were quite smooth, which we call cupping, many multiple caries, some overgrown teeth, likely age-related change and lack of preventative dental care in her life resulted in this. Actually, just recently, I pulled three teeth out of her. She does not have many more on the 400 arcade, which is the lower right side. So, which we also had to stage at the point. We knew that she had some teeth that were likely going to have to come out, but on initial exam, that was not something that we felt like her body could undertake an extraction. So it was just recently that we took out quite a few. She doesn't have many more left, but the poor dentition, the reason why you will see poor body condition as a result of poor dentition is because, as I said, you need the proper grinding surface to grind down the hay and make it digestible and make it something that the body can absorb and use and utilize. When you have dental abnormalities, and this is Honey's outcome in particular, is you have to find different options for food. So Honey right now is maintained on a liquid diet or a diet without hay. So she receives multiple forage options that her body can absorb: beet pulp, chopped hay pellets, things that we can soak and make soft and make it quite easy for her to consume, along with a senior grain. It can be a challenge in multiple ways to feed the senior horse who can't eat hay. So if you think about how much food your horse eats in a day, it can be hard to accomplish that in just a few sittings. So these horses who are needing to be fed a hayless diet, they have to be fed 3, 4, 5 times a day in order to meet their caloric needs. And then also not feed you. You want to avoid feeding them large amounts at one time. You can actually, their bodies are meant to graze. They're meant to eat small amounts throughout the day. And so there is like a kind of like a general rule of maximum amount you want to feed in a sitting, which is about 5 pounds. And so if you think of the average 1,000-pound horse, you're looking at trying to feed them about 20 pounds. And it's not quite possible to do that in only a once or twice a day setting. So usually you are having to feed them quite frequently, also just in terms of bowel health as well. And then, you know, we have a bit of a challenge here in northern Vermont, where our winters get quite cold. These horses are being fed a soaked diet due to the risk of choke. When you're feeding a lot of heavy, pelleted, cubed meals, you want to make sure that you're soaking that food appropriately to prevent choke, to prevent an obstruction in the esophagus, and calling me. So you know, it can be quite a challenge in the winter with freezing temperatures. So that is another difficulty in these cases. Another difficulty is honestly finances. Feeding these horses can be quite expensive. All of these feedstuffs are more expensive than feeding a horse hay, at least in our region. I know other regions have some challenges in terms of costs as well, but it's really it's a huge time commitment. It's a huge process to feed these guys and to find a diet that works for your individual horse. And then financially, it can be a challenge for people as well.
Yeah, that seems pretty labor intensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say there are a good number of horses at Merrimack Farm Sanctuary that are not able to eat hay. And so it keeps the staff quite busy in terms of feeding them. We end up feeding them these like boats of foodstuffs, kind of like spread out. So they also don't eat it too quickly because, you know, we always like, oh, well, we fed them and now they ate it all. And now they have to wait another couple hours so they can have another meal. And so, yeah, they get fed these boats of food of just like soaked beet pulp, alfalfa, hay cubes or hay pellets. And just to kind of like, and they get fed frequently throughout the day. So I think it definitely keeps the volunteers and the staff busy at Merrimack Farm Sanctuary in general. And even for the horse owner, who maybe this is a challenge that they're experiencing in their own personal horse, because this is something that many senior horses face, you know, with jobs and life and time commitments, it can be quite hard.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So how are Honey and Romeo doing now? Have they required any ongoing maintenance or special care because of the state of their starvation and dentition?
Yeah, so they're actually doing quite well. In Romeo in particular, I'd actually say maybe he can use to lose a little bit of weight. So he has responded really, really well to just love, care, and food, really. And so, you know, once we got them in a good place, we got them on a good vaccine protocol, they have their feet trimmed, they get their teeth done, sort of the works. And so he in particular is doing excellent. It just goes to show that sometimes all you need is food and care to really turn these cases around, because he had been quite weak and ill on the onset. Honey is also doing wonderfully. She is a fan favorite of our clinic, just because she has made such strides and has always been such a joy to work with throughout everything. We have had a couple, you know, instances of needing to adjust her diet. She's had a couple ocular exams with some uveitis flares in her left eye. And so, you know, we've had to address those as they've come. But in terms of, and we are making up for lost time when it comes to her dental care. I think there's actually more teeth that could come out for Honey. They both still do have heart murmurs present, left over from their initial intake, though their heart murmurs have improved in grading. So when initially they were what we call a grade 3 out of 6, they are now a grade 2.
Are there any other long-term effects of horses that have gone through starvation like this that you kind of have to manage or keep an eye on?
So I think there's always going to be a degree of immune insult that has occurred in these guys. And I think it's really important to support them as best as you can, to be as proactive as you can rather than reactive, because their bodies have undergone a period of damage and their immune systems have been compromised previously. And I think that these horses can live normal, healthy lives long term. But I think it's important to remember that the body remembers insults, right? Like we just like a wound will leave a scar, and that it is extra important to keep a close eye on these guys at any sort of abnormality, so that way you can address it before it becomes overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there any other advice that you'd give veterinarians or owners or individuals in general handling cases like this?
So the advice that I would give is take your time. You may be surprised by the impact that you can make. It may seem overwhelming. It may seem like you will not succeed, but take a step back, give yourself time, remember that you need to take things one step at a time and not overdo it from the start, and that these cases are going to be the most rewarding cases of either your ownership or your career at the end of it, because you will see an incredible difference that you have made for that animal.
And you mentioned that refeeding resource earlier in our conversation. Are there any other resources that people can turn to?
Yeah, so UC Davis has that resource that's excellent on refeeding and the emaciated horse. I think it's called the Nutrition for Rehabbing the Starved Horse. Honestly, even Kentucky Performance also has some really good articles on refeeding the malnourished horse that can be beneficial. There are other things that feel free to utilize is your local grain companies. They are going to know their particular products the most. So when it comes to that point where you are looking at, you know, more than just alfalfa, please reach out to your local grain companies so that you can talk about each of their individual products. Because I wouldn't go and say, oh, you know, we use this one product and it made the biggest difference. I think you have to look at what you have available locally. And they are going to be the ones that are the most knowledgeable of what they have. Another, you know, resource is that also the AAEP, American Association of Equine Practitioners, they also have a resource on equine rescue and rehab, how to deal with a starved horse. So feel free to check that out as well.
Well, thank you, Dr. Brunette, for joining us today and for sharing Romeo and Honey's stories with us.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you for having me. And I really appreciate having the opportunity to share their story with everybody.
And of course, that they had a happy outcome. It's a tribute to the work that you do and the work that the sanctuary does. So thank you to the whole team.
Yeah. Yes. Without the volunteers and the staff, you know, who are doing this round the clock care, we would not be able to be as successful as we are. So they are the true backbone.
Well, excellent. Well, thank you again. And to our listeners, thanks for tuning in. And thanks to our sponsor, DECRA.